This week on Three Questions with Corey Kareem.
One key theme, or an area I've made a lot of improvement that I think is worth sharing, is I had a bad habit of imbalancing what I would call my ratio of time spent working in the business versus working on the business. Professional athletes spend about 99% of their time practicing, right? And 1% of their time doing their job. And that's landed with me because in general, especially in marketing or advertising, we do the opposite.
Now, before we get started with this beautiful conversation, please help a brother out and click on that follow button on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Enjoy the conversation.
Welcome back, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Three Questions with Corey Kareem, the podcast where we sit down with some amazing people who are doing some amazing things. And that's right. You guessed it. We ask them three questions, sometimes four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. I know. I read the comments. But rather than talk about my guests, their wins or their successes, we talk about their failures, more specifically, the lessons that they learn from those individual experiences. At least we start the conversation from there. So with that being said, my guest today has a background in consulting, media, and marketing technology. So smart. Previously, she held the position of manager of strategic partnerships at Rogers Media, agency lead at Snapchat, digital advertising consultant at Deloitte, and now she's the head of digital marketing at Tim Hortons, one of Canada's most beloved brands. Get your double double, y'all. So without further ado, Raven Opnowski, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Corey. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So Raven, it's no secret that you've done a lot. So when you hear someone, when you go hit the big stage or you're pulled into a virtual conference or whatever the speaking engagement is, and someone rhymes back your experiences, your accomplishments, I like to ask my guests, what does that feel like for you? Are you more like on the side of, yeah, that's right, I did all of that? Or is it more like, are they talking about me? Is that really me that they're talking about introducing? How do you feel? Is there a little bit of A and B?
A little bit of A and B. I'm definitely humbled with the role that I have now and a lot of the mentors I've had that have given me really awesome opportunities through my career. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I just kind of see almost a Rolodex of imagery of really great people and really great projects that I'm really proud of. So I feel a lot of pride. There's a little bit of imposter syndrome sometimes, but genuinely, it's a lot of great memories for me.
That's awesome. So let's jump right into this. So as I mentioned, I typically like to start the conversation around failure or setbacks, as some people would like to refer to it as. So with that in mind, Raven, tell me about a time where you had like your biggest, you know, F up or mistake. What happened? I know, right? What happened? How did you work through it? And most importantly, what did you learn from it?
So this is a bit of a tricky question. I was thinking a lot about it, having, of course, listened to your podcast. Because I'm a huge supporter and fan of yours. But there is not one single individual monumental mistake that it came to mind for me. There's tens of thousands of mistakes. And unfortunately for me, I genuinely I seem to make the same mistake a few times before I can really ingrain a lesson. But one key theme, or an area I've made a lot of improvement that I think is worth sharing, is I had a bad habit of imbalancing what I would call my ratio of time spent working in the business versus working on the business. So when you're in the business, you're in the weeds every day. You can't get out of your own head. You're just trying to get stuff done, right? As opposed to taking time out to work on the business, think bigger, find the cohesion and solve some problems. So how I approach that as I matured through my career is I always rely on mentorship and allies. And one of my favorite quotes from a mentor is, and you'll appreciate this one, I know this, professional athletes spend about 99% of their time practicing, right? And 1% of their time doing their job. And that's landed with me because in general, especially in marketing or advertising, we do the opposite. And what I find if I'm kind of out of my own head, when I spend 1% of my time practicing, I'm not honing my craft. I'm not improving. I'm not helping myself or my organization to transform and do better. And that's not to say like sometimes you just need to buckle down and deliver the mail. But when I'm too laser focused on one target, I miss the broader impact or ability to make change. And so the solutions for me, like there's a myriad, but I really had to, number one, remind myself that I need to take that time out. So to deliver and be the best version of myself, I have to do all the obvious things that we know to do, but forget. I have to sleep well and eat well and work out daily and meditate, spend time with family, right? But I also have to find time to network and socialize and read and listen to podcasts on the industry. And I also have to be really, really diligent with creating almost a backlog of all of the big challenging things. Like if I'm in the day-to-day and I realize there's something that is frustrating for me, frustrating for my team, frustrating cross-functionally, it is a problem. It happens all the time. I have to backlog it and I have to make time to think critically about that operational problem and actually put solving it on my to-do list, not all the tasks that are impacted by that kind of larger problem. So I think really what I've learned comes down to time management, but it's more about an effective use of time that is dedicated to growth.
I love that. And it's so interesting that that was your response, because recently I wrote, "Are you productive?" It was a question I posed on social media a while ago. You're productive, but are you efficient? And I fall into that trap so much. Like, it's like the thing, like if you're a business owner, working on your logo, somewhat important, but working on finding customers, I would argue, is more important, more valuable to the long-term success of your business. So both of them are productive, but one of them is more effective and efficient for the longevity of your business. And I think that's a trap that so many people fall into. Another way of saying that, since we're on sayings, are you majoring in the minors? And are you minoring in the majors and majoring in the minors? Yeah, is another way of saying it. And you're right. I do see a lot of folks that we work with, including myself, we fall into that trap, so into the weeds. It like sucks you in. This happens to me a lot, even when I have to jump on different calls and I say, I have 15 minutes. I was like, oh, let me just answer this one email. Next thing you know, I'm 3 minutes late to that particular meeting. And I love the fact that you just described about, you know, working on the business, investing into yourself. So, you know, going to industry events, doing networking, listening to podcasts. So I have in my calendar, I can't even say that if I'm being very transparent, I don't necessarily follow it that well, but I have an hour every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. It's called learning time. I'm supposed to use it to learn. How often I use that to learn, let me not put myself totally out there like that. But I agree with you. I think that we do need to invest more time in our practicing our skills, whether that's designating time for certain podcasts that are industry related, time for self, all of that. So I love that.
Yeah, I think I find I'm actually operating at my highest efficiency as my best self when I am taking the balanced time to do all of those things. You lose sight of the fact that we have such an incredible network of people, of technologies, of new things to learn every day. It'll shock you once you've taken the time, how much you can adapt into your day-to-day life and very, very easily automate or find a great reference point or someone who synthesized the exact same problem and moved it through so much faster than you, that if you don't pick up the phone, if you don't go to those events, if you don't read, if you're not trying to keep up to date, you can actually kind of fall behind when you're just in your own silo of the day-to-day. And that's a trap we all fall into. I do. So I've tried the blocking time. That didn't work for me because my life is, my time is accountable to too many different stakeholders. But what I do is I always try to find a way to complement those things into my day-to-day routine. So when you and I first worked together, I used to bike 40 minutes or walk an hour to work every single day.
Now that's
my commute on the go train. But that is part of my like dedicated turn off, find time for me, whether that means that I'm just going to meditate and zone out, because sometimes that's what you need to be your best self, or I'm going to listen to a podcast, right? But I find it's easier for me to dedicate time every day, keeping myself accountable, but finding, I'll do a 5-minute workout if I don't get to work out that day, but 5 minutes, something every day. It's for me, it's repetition and forcing it into my kind of
I agree with you 1,000%. So one of the things I've started to adjust is I had an interview with a guy who acted as my trainer. He's actually owns 2 gyms. And that episode's called, shameless plug, Why We Suck at Health. And he's saying the number one area, reason why we fail at our health and wellness fitness goals is we actually don't schedule it. It sounds so simple, but it's a part of the bigger plan. And one of the things I started doing recently is I didn't up until now, and I'll still say I'm struggling with it, I don't have any boundaries when it comes to work. I don't know if that's a part of me just being kind of like an A-type, high performing. I don't mind working late hours because I enjoy what I do. I let clients respond to me on WhatsApp. Like it's wild, but I realize I don't have an hours of operation like a business would have, like 9 to 5 or whatever. And I need to set that. I need a schedule time when I need to go to bed and do these things. And one of the other things I've started to do as well, just because I'm afforded to in my position, is I break up my day. So I might start working at 7:30, 8 a.m. on the computer, but at 9:30, I might go to the gym when it's died down and work out for an hour, or I might do a yoga class in the morning or something like that and come back and get back to work and then work around my schedule. So I find breaking up my day has been working for me. But I loved everything you just said.
I like to just, and you should read better. You sound like you aspire to the Jeff Bezos philosophy of work-life balance, which is, he doesn't really like that adage because it's not a balance for him. If you love what you do, it doesn't feel like work, right? So
right.
It doesn't mean that's a 50-50 of time spent. It's about how are you investing your time to, you know, grow yourself, your portfolio, whatever you're prioritizing at the moment.
Right.
But I think we all just have to find our own. I'm a mom. I'm a career oriented person. I care about fitness. I find what works for me. For me, if I can stick to a routine, I try to do a certain amount of time every day, but if it's 5 minutes, I do the 5 minutes.
Yes.
Right. It's, I love just that. Kind of gritting it out. But everybody's got to, if you got to schedule it, I know that I was told that by a trainer a few years ago, like, keep this time as if it's time with your boss.
Right.
I cancel time with my boss all the time. Like, there's lots of priorities. My kid comes first, right? So sometimes things got to give. So you got to find what works for you.
1,000%. I love it. So you work for one of Canada's beloved brands, Tim Hortons, right? So from a marketing perspective, I would love to know, what do you believe separates Tim Hortons from other QSR brands? In other words, Raven, what is Tim Hortons' secret sauce?
We actually do have some secret sauces. I can't tell you those, but look, why I love Tim's, why I love working for Tim's, it's twofold. Number one, this brand is a powerhouse of community engagement, giving back, and celebrating Canadiana. Like, we're a global brand, But really, our power is based in nostalgia. The love of your roots. It's so tied to your country, your community, to sports. I have so many great memories. We all do, right? Of getting some Timbits after a sporting event, or, you know, an ice cap after something for school. It's just something that everybody grew up with. And there's power to that. That means a lot to me. I think the secondary part, selfishly, from a career perspective, if you want to work in marketing in Canada, there are not that many options to be at the epicenter of big change. You can always work at, and I'm not begrudging or belittling these opportunities, but you can work at McDonald's Canada or Adidas Canada, but you're part of a global brand. And the Canadian operations, I've worked at Canadian outposts, it's not necessarily given the same governing authority. So in Canada, we have a few banks, we have a few grocers, we have a few retailers. Thankfully, there's, you know, Shopify and other direct-to-consumer brands like Mejuri. But Tim's, for me, is really cream of the crop in terms of places to grow as a Canadian marketer. So the secret sauce to me is this brand means something to people. It's one of the most loved brands in the country. And for a career perspective, it's also just an incredible place to grow.
Right. No, and I see it. And I also find it fascinating when Tim started growing their presence in the US. I would hear, like, you know, either my cousins, my family, my friends talk about Tim Hortons. And it was such a weird thing to hear them talk about it, because usually we're talking about like Dunkin' Donuts or just Starbucks or what have you. So, and you're right. We do take a lot of pride in Tim Hortons brands, because it's the biggest Canadian brand in my perspective or my POV. So just pivoting here for a second, Raven, what are some common mistakes you see other brands or marketers making when it comes to whether product launches, coming out with an alternative service, just in general? What are some common mistakes that you've seen over the years that you've been in this industry?
This one I could talk about for a while too. I think one of the most predominant ones that I like to speak about the most, because I think we're at a bit of an impasse, is that a lot of brands and marketers they've had an outsized focus on measuring attribution over total impact. So basically what I mean by that is over-prioritizing low funnel performance marketing at the expense of brand building, right? And I totally get why. If you've ever been in any meeting room, you know that as soon as someone pulls up math, like, the debate is over. There's a number, the point has been made, so it's conclusive.
Right.
And the issue with pure performance marketing is that it assumes every business exchange is based on like a standalone one-time transaction between two entities, and they are in a state of perfect information and perfect trust.
Right, which doesn't happen in the real world.
No, it ignores that you need to make people aware of the product, aware of their need. They have to compare comparable products. They also are going to rely on some like brand recognition, brand trust, brand reputation. So your in-feed post or, you know, your search keywords alone will not get you a repeat customer. And not every communication that a brand should be held to a standard of garnering an immediate return. So I think one mistake is just every brand should try to be focused on a full funnel strategy. At the very least, remember the humanity and how you're reaching a guest and whether or not your priorities are focused, you know, on efforts that are going to make you memorable and get that customer back again.
Right. So it's so interesting that you said that, because I recently came across something. I'm actually trying to find it.
Ah, here it is. It says, you cannot act on information without attention.
So in your argument about we have a overemphasis on lower funnel marketing or attribution, and I guess over recent years, less attention or focus on upper funnel marketing, it kind of plays into that, right? So to me, what it also says is that, you know, last touch attribution has been something talked about in the industry for a long time. And I hear, you know, so many of our clients put so much resources into Google Ads, to be specific, right? And I'm talking about search. And then to me, when I think about how we shop and buy in everyday life, we know that there are several touch points before someone makes that decision, right? They see a billboard, they see that television ad, they're on Spotify. But most importantly, there's the nuanced things that don't show up as advertising, like the conversation at your hair salon, the conversation with your partner. Then you go to Google and you type in whatever XYZ product and you do your homework, and then maybe you get more information or maybe you make that purchase. But totally agree with you on that specific note.
Yeah, like it's not to negate, you know, my background. I'm very technical, right? Like I really got my start in data architecture. I've since done a ton of overall technology architectures, and I'm very grounded in our attribution and MMM models. And that's, of course, probably one of the key top three focus areas for me always. It's just that what I have learned and what I see mistakes being still made to this day is a lack of focus on, you know, we always say trying to find the art and the science.
Right.
And I feel like the art's been lost a little bit.
Right. No, and I agree with you. And there's an author, you might have heard of him, Rory Sutherland. He worked at Ogilvy in the UK, I believe, or maybe the US. And he talks about the art and science. In fact, his book is called Alchemy. And he's talking about, you know, similar to what you just said, how we've kind of fallen into this trap of sticking to these core KPIs. And we kind of lose innovation in sticking to the same KPIs. Very great book for anyone that likes to kind of expand their thinking. And so one example that he uses in the book, he talks about the train ride from Paris to London. He's like, when they look at, they're saying, hey, how do we improve the efficiency? How do we get to Paris to London a lot faster? Right? It's about a 2.5 hour train ride. Yes, we could take the right route of hiring engineers to find a way to get there faster, travel faster? Or is it that the consumers, the riders on the train, may be finding it a bit boring? And we all know that time is relative. So what if we add or increased the entertainment value on the train to make it seem like things are going faster, but they're actually not? That's another way to kind of approach that challenge. So I just find it that it's so interesting. Great book for anyone that likes to kind of geek out in advertising and marketing. Rory Sutherland, Alchemy. So I'm going to move on to my next question here, Raven. And I think I kind of made light of this or mention of this earlier in our conversation. It's no secret that you've been, you know, a bit of a trailblazer in the industry up here, you know, doing things. And you've risen to the top of the advertising and marketing world. So with that in mind, what do you believe you did that contributed to your success and rise as a marketing exec?
You're very kind, but there is no top. I got lots of reviews. I like this question because I think everyone's answer will be so different, but... Mm-hmm. For me, what's contributed to my success is endless curiosity and just a lot of grit. I'm very unafraid to make mistakes. So when we met, we were working at a telco, and I was there. We were both there for a long time. I was there for 6 years. I had a different job every year.
Yeah.
And so when we first met, I went from working in SEO and SEM to data-enabled programmatic to commercializing social media to branded content to supply side yield management to strategic partnerships. And I benefited so much from a very deep exploration of like really specialized topics.
Right.
I was only able to do because I was very willing to challenge myself constantly. And because I found incredible mentors that gave me those opportunities. A mentor of mine has always said, you know, when you're evaluating a new job for someone like you, think of it as percentage of time spent learning versus percentage of time spent teaching. Everybody's ratio is different, right? My sister, who's, you know, my mentor who I wish I could be more like, she's a teacher. Like, she loves to help people. Mm-hmm. I like to learn. That's how I'm motivated. Part of that is learning how to teach and learning how to manage, right? I've done that in my career, bigger groups. But I think for me, I'm energized by working with disruptive, transformational, big ideas that have a lot of gray matter and you have to pull out the black and white. And so if I were giving advice to anyone about what's contributed to my success, if they can peel something away from it, it is to find their curiosity. And I really think if you have that peak and you're engaged in that way, you will be successful, especially if you're not afraid of failure.
Right.
And like I said, I cannot count the tens and thousands of failures that I've had, but I've never held my self-worth to any failure, whether it's through work or personally or otherwise. It's just a learning opportunity and you keep grinding. So yeah, it's curiosity and grit.
I love that. And the grit part I always saw. I always admired your ability to be bold. And I can even remember at times where people are like, they didn't say this, but their response was like, who is this girl? Who does she think she is? But you just always had that from the very get-go. So I have to ask, were you like that as a kid, as a child growing up? Did you always kind of have that as a part of your persona?
I think it's like 50-50 nature and nurture. It's funny, we just got my 2.5-year-old report card, which they do at her daycare.
Oh, wow.
And there's something to the nature part of it, because what her teachers told us is, this girl, I can tell you right now, she's never going to be bullied. She very, for 2.5 years old, she's quite, you know, she's confident and seems to know who she is, and she's not ruffled. Like, she's very hard to sway. So I think that, like, being unafraid to make a mistake or just be who you are, part of that, I think comes from the examples I've had, and it's a little bit ingrown. But at the same time, like, one of my favorite quotes as a teenager, I think it was Diane von Furstenberg, I think it was a fashion editor, but she said, you know, I never knew what I wanted to do, but I always knew the type of woman I wanted to be. And I think that's landed, that's real for me, is I didn't always know I wanted to be in marketing. I didn't always know I wanted to be a parent. I didn't know. I wasn't one of those people that kind of saw my future self in terms of, you know, all the titles that I would have in my life.
Right.
But I was always raised to feel very comfortable being who I was, being in my own skin, and not limiting myself to the mistakes I make along the way. So part of it is who my mom is, seems to be who my daughter is showing signs of being. Right. But it was also a conscious choice. Those are the quotes that I kept, those are the things that I would try to reinforce.
Right. And to that note, let's say someone isn't naturally like that. They don't have the genes. They're not currently on that path. But is there a way for them to develop that organically?
I like to believe we're whoever we choose to be through deliberate practice and, you know, grit. Like I don't know. I'm not a, you know, sociological expert, but I definitely like to believe that whatever traits we want to take on, we can kind of be I like to learn by osmosis, right? Take a little bit of the best of everything that I see. So if that lands and anybody wants to kind of focus on grit, put themselves out there a bit, I don't think they should think that it's not possible.
Right, right. And I agree with you there. I believe there's an element of choice. I like to think that if people are naturally like that, changing their associations or making new friends, a new place of environment is good. Even just changing the clothes you wear are all ways to start thinking, or different ways that you could start to think differently about yourself and how you go about certain opportunities. So my last big question for you here, Raven, is what do you believe is the best lesson you've learned thus far from either failing or pushing through adversity?
An easy one, just keep pushing through. And I think that's what we've been talking about. A mistake does not define you.
Right.
I think you can, you internalize and you learn, but you, in the same way that we're often told to grant forgiveness and grace to other people, do that for yourself first.
Absolutely. Amen to that. So really quick, Raven, rapid fire questions, where I just ask you some fun, silly questions. You give me the first thought, whatever comes to your mind. First one is, what is your favorite thing to eat at Tim Hortons?
Oh, don't make fun of me. An old fashioned plain donut.
I love it.
That's my jam.
Love
I
it.
Dip it in my coffee.
Okay. Who's going to win the Super Bowl, or who's making it to the Super Bowl? I'll make it easy for you, because I know you're
big. No, the Ravens are going to win. Because, you know, ever since 96, when they changed their name, it's been my team ride or die. So Lamar will be winning this year. Thank you.
Okay.
We got our bye. We're ready to go. San Fran and the Ravens, and we're going to win.
I love it. I love it. She wants to own a football team, y'all. if she can do it. The last one is, what is a quote or a mantra you're currently living by?
Oh, gosh. I said like five. Can you count one of those? You know what? Mm-hmm. Talking to you, funny enough, one from where we met that I still quote to this day is, talk straight, build trust, and over deliver.
I love that. I love
That's from Rogers, Corey. That was over Rogers' mantra. But I love it. It like landed with me then, like 12 years ago. So
I love it. I love it. Raven, as always, always a pleasure to connect and speak with you. I consider you a dear friend, and you're definitely an inspiration to folks in and around the industry. And guys, as many of you know, I like to end each episode by saying this. If you just want to impress people, talk about your wins, your accolades, the shiny objects you have in your household. But if you really want to impress upon somebody, or make an impact rather on their life, talk about your failures, those down periods where things weren't working so well. But more importantly, talk about the lessons you learned from those experiences. That's how you really move the needle in someone else's life. So with that being said, Raven and I are out. Peace and love. Until the next time. Clockwise. Yeah. Never turn back. Yeah. Only go clockwise. Yeah.